We're holding on Membeis on with Aleph, beginning the third parak of our Masechta. Now that we dealt with the din of shechita, now of course, you know, an animal has to be shechted properly to be kosher, but the next thing you need in order for it to be kosher is you have to make sure it wasn't a treif. So most of our parak is going to be dealing with the din of treifus. What kinds of conditions make an animal treifa? We touched on it, of course, a little bit in the first and second parak, but we're going to be going through it comprehensively over here. The last part of our parak, the last few dafim, deal with the simonim of kosher and non-kosher animals and birds and whatnot, because also, of course, you need to know that in order to know whether what you're going to shecht and what you're going to eat is a kosher animal. So those kinds of things are the subject of our parak. On Sefer being chulin, it's all the dinim that apply to chulin animals. Now, of course, these dinim apply to kodshim as well, which is why this is in Seder kodshim. But unlike the dinim that we learned from Zvachim and Menachos, which apply pretty much exclusively to korbanos, all these dinim apply to all animals, which is why they're in Masechet Chulin. So the Mishnah starts off. Eilu treifus bebehema. The following are treifus in an animal. Now, we're going to say at the end of the Mishnah, a general rule, how do we determine whether something is a treifa or not? But first, here's a list, says the Mishnah. Nekuvas havesh. The first one is if the esophagus has a hole in it. Psukas hagageres. And the second one is if the windpipe is cut. So we've been learning all this time, and we've learned many times in the previous parak, that with the esophagus, even a small hole makes it possible, makes the animal possible and treif. With the windpipe, it would have to be only if it was a majority of its circumference. We'll talk about those details in the Gemara. We also learned earlier in the previous parak, we had Rava's understanding of it, that those two are actually not Trefa, but even more so nevela, meaning that the animal is actually metame, a person who touches it or carries it. So we discussed in the Gemara over there a few days, a week and a half or so ago on Daf Lamed Beis. Does the Mishnah just mean generically these are osur, and of them most of them are trefas and some of them are nevelas, or are we saying that or the Gemara had brought a different understanding over there, Rabbi Yochanan, that no, these are trefa as well, but that's how it was originally, as we had a Mishnah over there, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yeshevav argue about what happens when you have something that affects the shechita itself. Is the animal nevela or not? And originally Rabbi Akiva held that there's no difference, and afterwards he held there is. So then it comes out that our Mishnah would represent Rabbi Akiva's opinion before he changed his mind. So earlier in the Masechta, by the way, Rashi points out a practical fact. When you're shechting, of course, for a moment, you make a hole in the, you cut through the windpipe, you cut through the esophagus, and you can do them in either order, and the animal doesn't become treifa by that, because, of course, you know, it's all within one process of shechita. You're doing it quickly, so we don't say that would be nevela or treifa. Only if what we mean over here with these conditions is if it happened, the animal, the most of the windpipe is cut through or whatever, damaged, or there's a hole in the esophagus, and it's not part of the shechita process. Next, the Mishnah continues, Nika Prum Shel Moyach. The next one is if the membrane around the brain has a hole in it. Now, we're going to learn in the Gemara that there are actually two membranes, and we'll discuss which one is the one that's significant for our purposes. Really, anatomically, in modern anatomy, they actually distinguish three layers over the brain, but two of them are solid layers, more or less. The third one between them, the arachnoid, it's called, is more like a network of blood vessels and whatever. So apparently the Gemara is not counting that as a separate layer. Anyway, next, Nikav Alev Aves Chalali. The next one is if the heart has a hole all the way into its cavity. And again, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, the heart has multiple cavities in it, because you have the left ventricle and the right ventricle, and you have the atria and whatever. So you have different cavities within the heart. So here we're talking about where the hole went all the way through to the inside of the heart. As opposed to, Rashi points out that later in our parak, when we do the next Mishnah, then it's going to say, on the other hand, that if it didn't reach all the way until the inside, then the animal is still kosher. Tosfos points out that the other ones didn't even mention the base halal, because the other things that we mentioned so far, the esophagus and the membrane around the brain, etc., all those are fairly thin. So obviously then we're not going to say that a hole is going to matter unless it goes all the way through. But the heart muscle being so thick you would think that even maybe a deep enough hole was enough to make the animal chase, even if it doesn't go all the way through. So therefore, the mission has to stress for us that no, even by the heart, it doesn't matter unless the hole goes all the way in, where then, of course, blood will come pouring out of it, and then the animal is not going to live very long with a hole in its heart like that. We're not talking about necessarily, by the way, a hole between the chambers of the heart. That's something else. We'll eventually see in the Gemara possibilities about that. But here we're talking about a hole from the inside of the heart to the body cavity. Tosfos points out also, by the way, that these ones that we're mentioning over here, that if they have a hole, then the animal is tshefa, all the more so if that organ was actually removed, was missing or surgically removed or whatever. So Tosfos discusses that and discusses some ins and outs of some of the organs that we're talking about. This kind of thing, now you would think, if the heart's removed, of course the animal's dead. There's really no chiddush in that. That actually became a big machloikas about 300 years ago. One time, the story goes that somebody had shechted something, that a chicken had been shechted, and then somebody was preparing it, and they couldn't find a heart in it. So they went and asked their rug. It became a huge controversy. Actually, the obvious thing was to say, and the Chacham Tzvi who was one of the great rabbanim of that time, wrote a number of tshuvas about it. He said, "What's the question? Of course, in this case, it was a chicken. A chicken can't live without a heart. No creature can live without a heart. And this chicken was perfectly healthy until now. Obviously, it had a heart. And when you were opening up the chicken and getting ready to salt it, whenever you dropped the heart and a cat came and ate it or something, there should be no problem. The animal is for the chicken is of course kosher. When would we say if the heart was removed? I mean, let's say, for example, you pulled out the heart, and then a minute later, before the animal had a chance to completely die, you shechted it. Then that would be we'd say it's tshefa, or even maybe actually nevela. On the other hand, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeschitz was a young rav at that time. He wrote some tshuvas on the subject, saying, of course, that's true. An animal can't live, or a bird can't live without a heart. On the other hand, maybe what it is here, maybe the heart is so misshapen and malformed, it does its basic function of pumping blood around the body, and therefore the chicken was able to live. But it doesn't mean necessarily still the fact that it may be so misshapen so much that we wouldn't even recognize it as a heart. Maybe that's enough to make the bird tshefa. So it was a huge controversy about 300 years ago. Continues the Mishnah. By the way, an interesting linguistic point over here that a couple of Mephoshim point out. The first one we had over here, the first one on the list was Nekuvas Avesh, which means if the esophagus is punctured. But the rest of them, instead you have the Nikav. Nikav Krum Shamoyach, Nikav Alev Leves Halala, etc. What's it? Nekuvas means one that has a hole. Nikav means it was punctured. So what's the difference? Why by the Vesh are we saying that it, why are we using the word Nekuvas, that it was, that it does have a hole in it? It is punctured, and Nikav, meanwhile, is a different linguistic form. That means it was punctured. So a couple of interesting reasons Rav Leib Sintz, one of the great Goyim of Poland 200-odd years ago, explains that because, we just said before, Rashi had pointed out that when the esophagus is punctured during Shchita, then that's normal. That's a perfectly normal thing. It gets cut during the process of Shchita. So therefore, we can't say Nikav Havesh, because that would imply any time that the esophagus gets a hole in it, then the animal is tshefa, and that's not correct. Therefore, we have to say Nekuvas, which implies it already had a hole from beforehand. Then there's another explanation from the Nochem of Shadik that says, you know, one of the great Sadikim of Yerushalayim 150, 200 years ago, he says that what we're going to talk about when it comes to the esophagus, we're going to talk about in the Gemara, it has two layers. It has two layers of muscle and whatever. And unlike other organs, where we're saying the hole has to go all the way through in order for it to be a problem, by the esophagus, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, even if the holes are not one next to the other, so the inner layer gets punctured in one place and the outer layer in a different place, nevertheless the animal is going to be tshefa for reasons that we'll learn in the Gemara. So therefore, instead of saying mikav, like by all the other ones, instead it uses a different term, nekuvas. By the way, a lot of this information and a lot of what we're going to learn in this parak, there's an amazing sefer that came out years ago in Eretz Yisrael called Sichas Cholin. It goes in general through the whole Masechta Cholin and goes in detail through many of the topics that we've discussed so far, and has lots of illustrations and explanations from different sfarim, including some really obscure ones. It's a classic whenever you're learning Masechta Chol. It's a hard paraklochik. Although you also have a sefer that came out in English some years ago and then was translated into Hebrew called Chol and Illuminated, which also has amazing pictures and things of things that we need to know throughout the parak at various times. Bez Hashem, I'll send out on the group. I'll send out relevant pictures that we can use to follow the Gemara. Here we don't need it so much yet. The Mishnah continues. Nishbar Hashed Rav Nifsek Achot Shalot. Another tshefa is if the spine is broken and the spinal cord is, and then the spinal cord is cut. Rashi points out that it's not the spine that's the problem, it's the spinal cord. The reason, so it's not two separate tshefas, it's one tshefa. Practically speaking, how does the spinal cord come to get cut or damaged would be if the spine, it would be if the spine breaks. But it's not really, even if the cord breaks for some other reason, independent of the spine breaking, and we'll have examples in the Gemara later on, we'll have examples where it's infected, or we'll have various other examples, then it's also tshefa. And the reason is, of course, because the spinal cord has nerves attached to it that control various basic functions of the animal. You have, for example, let's say the nerves that go to the lungs are disconnected, then the animal can't breathe. And similarly with other vital components of the animal. Eventually, we're going to learn in the Gemara that there comes a point beyond which if the spinal cord breaks, it's not a problem because you get back to the back half of the animal. You eventually get to a point where all it's doing is controlling the tail and the hind legs and things like that, and those are not so essential to the animal's life. Next. Nitala Kaveh, the Mishnah continues, if the liver has been removed, and nothing of it is left. We're going to actually end up learning in the Gemara, that's not, if nothing of it left, we're going to actually learn there has to be a certain minimum amount left, but we'll get to that in the Gemara later on. Next, continues the Mishnah, if the lung has a hole in it, or if the lung is missing something. Now the Gemara, we're going to get later on Daf Mem Zayin or so, we're going to get into the genium of the lungs in more detail, and the Gemara is going to ask if it's missing something, that's the same as having a hole, what's the difference? And the Gemara is going to explain what it means over there, that missing means that some of the basic anatomy of the lung is missing, and the number of lobes, as we're going to talk about there in the Gemara. So now what it is really when we talk about the lung having a hole in it, we're really talking about the lung also has different layers. We'll talk about it in the Gemara eventually, but the Maharam Shif points out that unlike by the brain, the Mishnah have used the expression nikakrum shomoyah, if the membrane surrounding the brain has a hole in it. But over here, it doesn't say nikav krum shoreya. It doesn't say if the membrane around the lung has a hole in it, even though that's actually what we're talking about has a hole. We're talking about that outer, we're talking about that membrane. So Maharam Shif says the difference is because by the brain, you have the brain and then you have the membrane around it. You have the various layers around it, in anatomy, the dura matter, the pia matter, the whatever. So those are not part of the brain itself. They're there to protect the brain, but they're not part of it itself. Therefore, the Mishnah had to say krum shoreya, as opposed to here, the membranes around the outer membrane around the lung is part of the lung itself. Basically, without that, all the air sacs in the lung would all leak out all the air. So therefore, so it doesn't even have to say krum shoreya. It can just say the rea itself, the lung itself, and it means automatically that includes the layer, the pleura, it's called in medicalese, around the lung. By the way, if I'm making a mistake on any of the medical terminology, then please correct me. I think I have them basically right, but we'll see. Reb Shimon Omar, Chichinokov, Rebesa Simponis, Reb Shimon says, just because the lung has a hole, or rather the outer layer, the pleura, in and of itself, not a reason to declare the animal trait, unless the hole goes all the way into the symphonis. The symphonis are the bronchi, the branches branches throughout the lung through which the air flows in and out. So Reb Shimon says it would only be a problem if the hole goes all the way into there. In other words, similar to with the heart, where we said it has to go all the way into the cavity of the heart, the same way Reb Shimon says by the lung, the essential part of it is the symphonis, the bronchi, and therefore Reb Shimon would say it's only a problem if the hole goes that far, whereas the Chachamim are saying that not, even if it goes any way into the lung, because then you have the smaller air sacs over there, the alveoli, that also are going to be a problem. Next, Nikva HaKeva. The next one is if the Keva has a hole in it. Now, kosher animal has four stomachs. So the last one of them, which corresponds to a human stomach or the stomach of other animals that don't chew their cud, is where actual digestion takes place. The other ones are kind of like the prerequisites for digestion. We'll talk about their function soon. So now if a cava, that fourth stomach, has a hole in it, then also we're saying the animal is tricked. Next, nikva ha-mora, the next one would be if the mora has a hole. The mora is the gallbladder. First, because Yom Tov points out that the word mora can also mean the gall itself, the bile itself. That's where the liver produces it, and an overflow of it is stored in the gallbladder. But here, the word mora means the gallbladder itself if it has a hole. Here also you have the question about what happens if the Tosfos says that by the same token, again, we talked about a couple of minutes ago, if an organ that has a hole in it and it's trefa, if it's also equally trefa, if that organ was removed, Tosfos says the same thing is true as far as the gallbladder, that also if it's gone, then it would be trefa. On the other hand, the Rav Yoh says that if the gallbladder is removed, it's kosher. Eventually, we're going to talk about, actually, there are creatures that naturally don't have a gallbladder. Deer, in particular, among kosher animals, don't have a gallbladder, and they're, of course, kosher because that's the normal way that they grow. But other creatures, if the gallbladder is removed, he has this machlokas, the Tosfos and the Rav Yoh, whether it's kosher. But here we're saying, if it has a hole, then it's definitely trefa. Because, you know, again, with all these organs that have holes in them, the problem is that their contents are going to leak out into the body, and then the animal's not going to survive, that kind of thing. By the way, a very basic point that comes up as far as these trefas is, first of all, we talked about the other day that the Rambam points out, Shulchan Aruch confirms, that we can't add to or subtract from any of these trefas, even if nowadays veterinarians, doctors, whatever, tell us that a particular condition is survivable, then nevertheless it doesn't matter and the animal is still trefa, and vice versa if they tell us a new condition that's not listed over here. One interesting point that the Ramban brings up in this connection, we're going to say later on, we're going to say that the rule is that if an animal can't live, then it's trefa. We're going to have a machlokas in various places in our parak, whether in fact trefa chaya or trefa enechaya. Can a trefa animal survive long term? And then this is the way it is, that nevertheless it's considered trefa. Is there a sakosiv, or is it that in fact the rule is going to be that it can't live more than a certain amount? So the Ramban points out, and this seems to be a machlokas the metzius, just check the animal and see whether it lives long term or not. So the Ramban explains that what it is the Chachamim figured out, looking into it, that generally these animals don't live for more than 12 months. But they realize once in a while it could happen. It could be a rarity that an animal can in fact live for more than 12 months, but nevertheless, a trefa is still a trefa. It might be, for example, that there might be medications that are available for it that would cure it, but that doesn't matter. The Chachamim figured out the Chachamim figured so, and vice versa. For example, the Gemara is going to give an example later in our parak of a case where an animal dies from a certain kind of blow, but the Gemara explains if you give it a certain drug, you give it a certain medicine, then it would cure it and it would be able to live. So the same thing over here when you have an opinion that says trefa chaya, and even you can't say definitively that trefa chaya or trefa enachaya, because there can always be exceptions and there can always be cures for those trefas. And there are, in fact, different rishonim that talk about those points. The Rashba, in fact, says there's no question. The Rashba says on the other now here. So the Ramban is saying that fine, you could rarely have an animal that's a trefa that lives longer than 12 months, but it doesn't matter, trefas are trefas. The Rashba actually disagrees with that very strongly. He says, no, if you see an animal that's a trefa that lives more than 12 months, it has to be you made a mistake in the dates, or you mixed up animals or something. If not, he says, you motzi laz on the chachamim and the nevi'im who learned halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, that for enachai. But again, the Ramban says, and Tosfos HaDrosh says, that it just means in general, most such animals won't live more than 12 months, but there can always be rare exceptions. Achronim also discuss in and out of that. The fact is that with these trefas, it'll be also to eat even if this particular specimen does live longer than 12 months. Okay. Continuing the mission, and nikvu hadakin. The next thing is if the dakin, which is the intestines, have a hole in them. So after the stomach, and after the stomach, eventually you get to the intestines, the large intestine, the small intestine, whatever. If those have a hole in them, now we're going to learn in the Gemara that you have a part of them where you can see that in a person, you can see that in an animal, where they're kind of like wrapped around one another. In those areas, it may not necessarily be terefe, it has a hole, because it just means, in other words, so the food will leak out from one lining, from one foil to the next. And fine, it won't leak out into the body cavity, but here we're talking about where there's a hole into the body cavity. Next, continues the Mishnah. Keres ha-pinimis, the inner keres shenikva, that has a hole in it, or shenikva roiva chitzona, or most of the outer layer of it was ripped. We're going to learn in the Gemara, well, we're going to discuss later in the Perek and afternoon, what the keres ha-pinimis is. One possibility, the Gemara mentions over there, is that the keres is the first of an animal's four stomachs. What you have is like this. You have a kosher animal, since it chews its cud, has four stomachs. The first one is called the keres. In English, it's called the rumen. It's a very large one. The animal eats we'll explain how the flow of it goes in a second. So you have the keres, called in English the rumen. Then you have the second one is called the beis hakosis, and in English it's called the reticulum. Then you have hemsis, which in English is called the omasum. It's actually a very similar word, hemsis, omasum. It might even be that the word in Russian Kurdish is borrowed from Latin or vice versa. With that said, there are Mephoshim will explain that the word hemsis comes from a word that means to grind up because to break down because the food is broken down a bit. And then finally you have the cava, which is called in English the abomas. The way it works is basically an animal, a cow, let's say, chews and eats a lot of grass or hay or whatever you feed it, that goes into the rumen. It stays there for a while. It doesn't actually get digested there per se, but during that time that it's in the rumen, bacteria start operating on it. They help break it down chemically so that way later on the animal will be able to digest it because grass, you know, the cellulose in grass and things like that, a mammal by itself is not able to digest, doesn't have digestive juices for it, but these bacteria that live in the rumen are able to, so they're able to break it down into something that then can be digested and the animal can get nutrition from it. So they break it down in the rumen. Eventually it gets broken down enough that it goes down into the beis hakosis, the reticulum. There it gets watered up into a bowl, into a cud, and it's not small. The pieces of it are not small enough yet for the animal to actually digest. So therefore, that's when the animal chews its cud. That's when it comes back up from the beis hakosis to the mouth, and the animal chews it again. Eventually, it goes through this as many times as necessary. Eventually, it gets to the point where the particles are small enough that now it can go through. It goes back down into the beis hakosis. And then from there, there's a hole, a sphincter, that opens up to allow it to go into the next one, the hemsis, the third stomach. In the hemsis, water is extracted from there, various fatty acids, various things like that, and then it's passed on to the cava, the fourth stomach, where you have digestive juices that break it down, that break it down, and then it gets sent off to the, to the duodenum and the intestines, the pancreas and the duodenum and the rest of that, and the rest of that whole digestive system. So that's how the four stomachs work in brief. So now we're talking about if the keres ha-pnimis, and we're going to see in the Gemara what the word pnimis means in this connection, the inner keres shenikra, if it has a hole in it, or shenikra roiva chitzona, or if most of the outer part of it is ripped. Rabbi Yehuda says, and we're going to discuss in the Gemara whether Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with the Tanakhama, or whether he's just clarifying. But Rabbi Yehuda says, "Agdola tefach, with a large animal, the amount of rip in the chitzona and the outer and the muscles surrounding and the muscles surrounding the keres, surrounding the rumen, would be only if the rip is a tefach or more. Would the animal be terefa? Vaktana, a small animal, beruba, it's enough if most of that layer of muscle that covers the rumen is ripped through. And here we don't mean gdola and ktana. Rashi says not the same as behema daka and behema gasa, which we've learned that category before." Behemagasa is cattle, and behemadaka is sheep and goats. So we mean partially the size of the animal. So in other words, it's going to be terefa. Rabbi Yehuda says, if a tefach or the majority, whichever is, if a tefach or the majority, whichever is less, is ripped. If it's a tefach, then it's always going to be terefa. And if it's a small animal and the rip is less than a tefach, but it's the majority of that section, then it's also going to be terefa. Next, the Mishnah continues. Hemsis, Uvesa Koisis, Shinikvul Achutz. Next, we have the other two. So far, we started by mentioning the Keva, the fourth stomach. Now, we just mentioned the Keres, which is the first stomach. Now, you have the second and third, those third and second stomachs. Hemsis, Uvesa Koisis, Shinikvul Achutz. Those two, if they're punctured towards the outside, meaning towards the outside, as opposed to if they're punctured one into another. So, if you have, instead of that, you have that hole, that sphincter that opens and closes between them to allow the partially digested food, the chewed cud, to go from the base acosis to the hemsis, to the further digested. So that's normal, of course, but if you have another hole between them, big deal. So fine, it means that some of the food won't get thoroughly digested as much as it should before, and then the animal won't be able to get as much nutrients out of it. But that's not a fatal condition. But if there's a hole in either the hemsis or the desiccosis to the outside, again, inside the body cavity, then food is going to leak out of there, and then it's going to kill the animal. So all of those are traitors. Next, continues the Mishnah, Nothlam in a gag. The next one is, if an animal falls off a roof, 10 tefachim high, etc., as we're going to learn eventually in the Gemara. But the point is, it actually says, we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, you check it right away, you don't find any abnormalities in it, you don't find anything seems to be broken or crushed or anything like that. Nevertheless, it's still also halacha l'moshe misinai, and Rashi says there's not even necessarily a reason for it. We have to be choshish that internal organs of it have been damaged, even though we can't see any such damage. Eventually, we're going to learn in the Gemara that if the animal lived afterwards for 24 hours, then you shechted it, then it would be kosher because then it means that there's no damage, there's no significant damage to the internal organs. So Rashi says over here, there's really no reason though behind this why it should be treif if you shecht it within the 24 hours. That's just how it is. But there are mafoshim who say there is a certain logical basis behind it, because again, the idea is that you might have that the Torah Sabayis explains exactly that. He says, actually, what do you mean? Why can't we shecht it right away and check it? But the Gashla says that no. The fact is that the fact is. There is a really good reason. You might not be able to notice the damage yet. It takes 24 hours for the damage to come out and be noticeable. Next, the next major trefa is where most of its ribs are broken. And the last one, and the last one is where it was clawed by a wolf or various other kinds of predators. Now we're going to learn later on in the perek when we get into the dinim of Jerusa that what happens is when an animal is clawed by a predator such as a wolf or the other ones that we're mentioning over here in the Gemara, what happens is that there's eres that comes into the animal and damages it. Eres literally means poison. So it sounds like the predator actually poisons its prey. It becomes very hard to understand because, let's say, for example, a wolf doesn't have poison in its claws or anything. You have, let's say, if it was a snake or something, then fine. But a wolf doesn't have such a thing. So there's a popular explanation that what we really mean is that the animal's claws are going to cause an infection in the prey. And now, especially you have now a wolf is not in this category, but there are certain creatures. We're going to talk about in the Gemara, but we're going to talk about in the Mishnah now about the lion. We're going to talk later on in the Gemara about cats, etc. A number of creatures in that family of lions and cats and the rest of them have retractable claws. They can retract their claws into their paws, and therefore all the more so then bacteria gets trapped underneath them from their previous prey. So even with a wolf, fine, it can't retract its claws, but apparently there's enough room under its nails for that kind of stuff to get stuck in there, and therefore now it claws the next victim. Then it's going to cause an infection over there. The Gemara is going to talk about that the area turns red, which is of course a sign of an infection, and therefore so eventually that kills the animal because of the infection. So again, you might say nowadays we can give the animal antibiotics. This goes back to the point that we don't change the treifas even if circumstances change. Next, Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, Rabbi Yehuda says, and again, is Rabbi Yehuda arguing or is he clarifying? We'll see in the Gemara. So Rabbi Yehuda says it's not so simple. You can't say as a blanket statement. So Rashi actually says that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with the Tanakhama. The Gemara is going to discuss later on in the Perek whether he is actually arguing or whether he's just clarifying. In any case, Rabbi Yehuda says it's not so simple to say that if a wolf claws an animal, then automatically it makes it chafe. Jerusalem says they've bedakta. He says when it comes to a wolf, that would only have the power to make it chafe only by a behemoth daka. And here we mean daka in the regular sense, sheep or goats. Because they're the poison or the bacteria, however you want to understand it, is going to be enough to have an effect on it and therefore to kill it, as opposed to a large animal, that small amount wouldn't be enough. It would just be able to fight off the infection. But Rabbi Yehuda says for behemoth gasa, for cattle, to make them shake, you would have to have that a lion for it. That would be powerful enough. That the poison or venom or infection or whatever you want to call it makes it tricky. Now, mostly our Mishnah is focusing on animals. We started off Eilus Tchilefis Bebehema. We started by focusing on animals. Birds we're going to talk about mostly later in the Perek, because not all the Tchilefis that apply to animals apply to birds. There are certain unique ones that apply only to birds, and there are certain ones that apply only to animals and not to birds, as we'll see as we go through the Perek. But now, the Mishnah digresses a minute to talk about what kinds of animals can cause Jerusa by a bird. So the Mishnah continues, Jerusa sanates ba'oipadak, when it comes to small birds, then if they were clawed by, a nate, then that would be enough to make them chafe. Rashi translates a nate as a bird called in English a sparrow hawk. So a sparrow hawk, it's a small, smaller type of hawk, but again, for small birds, it's clawing of them with claws or talons or whatever they're called by a bird is enough to make a small bird chafe. On the other hand, when it comes to a larger bird, such as, Rashi says, for example, geese and chickens, for those you would need a larger predator to make them chafe. You would have to have a larger bird. So Rashi over here translates with a French word that translates to a regular hawk. The word gas then would just mean large. There's a different girsa that some of the Gaonim and the Rishonim have. The word is not gas, but rather gaz, which would be the actual name of this bird, in Lashon Kodesh. And in that case, they translate it wouldn't be a hawk, like Rashi says, but rather it would be a falcon. So again, the idea being, in other words, depending on the size of the animal, is what size of predator is going to be enough to cause enough damage that the animal would be chafed. So the Mishnah finishes off. This is the general rule. Kosha and Kamoya Chaya, anyone where an animal in that condition would not be able to live, Chalefa, then the animal is Chalefa. So again, this gets into the discussion that we had before of we're going to have later on in the Perek. Does that actually mean that it's not going that definitively it's not going to live? It's not going to live beyond a certain time, or is it that in general it's not going to? But there can be rare exceptions. Okay. So the first thing we're going to deal with then is that last point in the Mishnah. We're saying the general rule is, and then eventually the Gemara is going to explain what those words zahfal come to include. We're saying ein kamoya chaya tshefa. The basic definition of tshefa is an animal that having this condition is not going to be able to live. So let's first figure out where we know that. So the Gemara says omer of shimon lakish remes the tshefa min atoda minayim. Where is there a hint in the Torah for tshefa? So Gemara says, what do you mean, where? It says right there in the pasuk, don't eat meat that was torn in the field, which the most basic meaning of it is that if you have an animal that was in the field and was torn or clawed by a predator, then it's also to eat. And from that, what do you mean? Where's a hint for today for Anatara? Now Rashi points out there are we learn other dinim from it. We learn a dinim later on in our Masechta. We learn dinim about an animal that was pregnant and the baby started coming out before the mother animal was shechted. Those parts that came out are also to eat because it's called bosa basada. The meat is already in the field outside of its normal place. We learn about kodshim taken outside of its mikdash. Nevertheless, in mikri it's a mikshuta. The fact is, the simple meaning of the pasuk is that the animal was attacked by a predator, and the pasuk says that it's safe. So no, what he means is Elo Gemas the Tshefa Shein Achayim in Atorah Minayim. Where is there a hint in the Torah for the concept that Tshefa Ein Achaya this idea that a chayfa is not going to be able to live long term. Again, we're going to discuss later on in our perek and in the next perek about how far that rule extends. But basically, our Mishnah had said that the general rule, how do we determine whether something is chayfa, is in kamoya chaya. So where is there a hint in the Torah to that concept? Meaning, after all, the Torah is only mentioning if it was clawed by a predator. So maybe only that is chayfa and nothing else. And after all, the Mishnah had said, because Tony Sefer had said at the end of the Mishnah, Zachfal, Kol Shein Kamoya Chaya Tzvefa, anytime that something like it is not going to be able to live its Tzvefa, Mikval the Tzvefa and a Chaya. Automatically, then, that demonstrates that the definition of Tzvefa is that it's not going to live. Long term is, as we're going to discuss later on in the parent. But there's a Manola, and so where do we know that from? So like this. So because the pasuk says v'zois ha'chaya asher tofu, zois actually says in the pasuk, this is the chaya that you should eat. Now the word chaya, of course, can mean a wild animal, and sometimes also the word chaya is a more generic term meaning animal. It can include behema as well. But also Rashi says we can also read it as if it said zois chaya. This is what will live. So zois chaya asher toflu. So therefore we learn from that. So chaya echor. You can only eat an animal that is going to live, that has chayus, that is going to live. She'ena chaya lo toflu echor, that you can eat. She'ena chaya lo toflu, from what you can't eat, what won't live, you can't eat. The clouds, trefa, lo choya, so therefore that means that when the Torah tells us not to eat a trefa, means that it's not going to live. Now, we did learn in the previous pedic, we have the topic of mesukenes, an animal that's dangerously ill, but there's nothing specific wrong with it. There's no particular organ that has been damaged or whatever. And there we said you are in fact allowed to eat it. Because there we said it's part, conceivably you might find a cure for it. Etc. So therefore, that's not a reason to ask for it. But here we're talking about, where again, the Chachamim, as the Ramban talks about, the Chachamim figured out, that the Chachamim researched and figured out that these are conditions where the animal is going to die, and there's no cure for it. And again, even if in later times maybe a cure was found for some of these things, it doesn't matter. For that matter, actually, we're going to discuss in the Gemara all these cases with holes in organs. Sometimes you may have that the hole starts healing, and you have a scar grows over the hole. Generally speaking, the Gemara is going to tell us that doesn't work either. It's still, the animal still doesn't return to being kosher. We'll have examples of that throughout the parak. So that's where we know where trefa is. The definition of a trefa is that it's not going to live. Well, the Gemara says, well, Amanda Omar, trefa chaya. What about, though, according to the other opinion that we touched on before, whether a trefa is able to live more or not, where again, as the Ramban said, it's not even machlokas in the seals, because you may well have that occasionally such animals may live, but that doesn't tell us that's true of the general one of them, or vice versa. Even if we find that they die within 12 months, it doesn't mean that a particular individual one might not have been able to live longer. So there is, in fact, machlokas on that point later in the Masechta. So how long can a trefa be expected to live maximum? So l'manda omer trefa chaya. So according to the opinion that an animal can be a trefa and nevertheless still continue to live, minole, well, where does he know then that what the definition of trefa is? And the answer is nafkalei means v'sachaya asher tochu. He learns it from the same. He learns it from the same pasuk that says these are the chaya that you can eat. Meaning zois is a meat. Zois echol chaya acheres lo seichel. Implying this you can eat, but a different kind you cannot. When the cloud the trefa chaya, that means in other words a trefa may well live, but nevertheless you still can't eat. So the Gemara says the Ida Chai Zois my Avilei. Well, the first opinion that says we learn from the word Chaya, what is he doing with the word Zois, which is a miut? And the answer is he uses it to teach us what was taught in a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the Tonid Veda Bishmal, when it says Zois HaChaya Asher Tofu, when it says this is the Chaya that you can eat, that this implies that it's something that you can actually point. Means Hashem grabbed a hold of and took an example of every single kind of creature, the head of the Moshe, and showed it to Moshe. He tells him, these you can eat, and these you cannot eat. So he actually showed him each one. This way he could demonstrate to the Jewish people which ones are kosher and which ones are not. Now, Tosfos points out, now there are other things we know that Hashem had to show Moshe because he had a hard time understanding them. Making the menorah, when to declare Rosh Chodesh, certain details of Shiratzim, but here Hashem is showing him the animals because Tosfos explains, it's not that he had difficulty in it. With Matzah Shekel, we also know Hashem showed him, but that's because he was wondering how could it be a person can give Matzah Shekel, and that should be a kapara for him. But here, he needs to show the Jewish people, Pashit, which ones are also, which ones are mutter, so therefore that's why Hashem showed them to him. So therefore, so that opinion learns that from this word Zois, that Hashem showed each one of them to him. Okay, so the Gemara says the Ida. Well, the second opinion, that's learning from Zois, also needs the word Zois to teach us that point. How can he also use the word Zois to say that it means from there we're going to learn the whole definition of Tereka? And that you can't eat a Tereka, even though according to that opinion, it's Chaya, it could very well survive. So the Gemara says, fine, Eilachanami, you're right. Ela, Tereka, Chaya, Menole, so according to that opinion, where do we learn that a Tereka is able to live, and it doesn't matter whether it dies within 12 months. Nevertheless, we have the definition of Tereka, so he does not learn the Idach Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel. He would learn it from a different Braisa of Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel. The Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel, at the end of the, after the Parsha Shemini, after it lists the kosher and non-kosher animals, and the various other species, so it finishes off. You have to distinguish between HaChaya HaNechelas, between the animals that can be eaten, Uvein HaChaya HaShor Lo Se'ochol, and the animals that cannot be eaten. So now the implication is we're not just talking about between different species. We're talking about even though it's chaya, even though it could live, nevertheless, lo se'ochol, you're not allowed to eat it. So now, Elu, Shemona Esfiyat Trefus, Shinemo Lamoshe Mesinai, this is the 18th Trefus that were listed in our Mishnah that was said, Halacha Lamoshe Mesinai, but on the other hand, it says Chaya, so therefore that implies, according to this opinion, Trefus can live, and nevertheless, we still have a definition of Trefus that were given Halacha Lamoshe Mesinai. We're saying 18, there's really different ways of dividing it up. The Gemara is going to tell us tomorrow, that we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that there are actually 8 general categories. And then within that, now you have, for example, one of those categories is Nekuva, where there's an organ that has a hole. And in our mission, we had a whole bunch of different organs that have holes in them that would be problems. So 8 is the general types of things that can cause problems. In our mission, we had 18, and a bunch of them, the Gemara is going to break down into finer and finer categories. For example, we have Harayash and Nikra. We have the lung has a hole in it, and from that, we have many different details that apply to the lungs, as we're going to go into the Gemara. And Dachman Vavim Zayin. So therefore, altogether, once we break it down, when the Rambam lists it in Hilchos Shechita, he comes out with a list of 7. So in any case, you have two different opinions. If you say Trefa Ein Achaya, then we learn it from the fact that it says Zois Achaya Asher Toiflu, that it means that so from Zois we learn that Hashem showed Moshe all the creatures. From Achaya we learn that the animal has to be able to live, otherwise it's a Trefa. Whereas according to the other opinion, from Zois we learn that Hashem showed Moshe all the creatures, and we don't learn anything from Achaya according to him, but rather we learn Uvein Achaya Asher Lo Se'ochol, that even though you have an animal that's a chaya, nevertheless you can't eat it because it's Trefa, because it has one of the 18 things that are lawful Moshe Mesinai. So the Gemara says, there's only 18, the two leka. Are you telling me there's no more? Now, we're not even talking about, again, breaking down those 18. You have ones that are not at all mentioned in our mission. First of all, you have 4 that the simon for them is the word basker, which is the initials of 4 conditions that an animal might have, which we're going to have on Omid Beis. So you have those. Those are not listed in the Mishnah. So Rashi gives a list over here. We're going to have them in the Gemara soon. The bay stands for behema shenechtechu raglera, an animal whose legs were chopped off. The samach stands for chisoren shedra, if there's something missing from the spine, a certain number of vertebrae missing from the spine. The gimel stands for gluda, if the animal has been flayed, if the animal has lost its skin, whether from disease, whether from overwork, whether whatever it is. And the resh stands for chorusa, with a lung dried up. We have those 4. Those are not mentioned in the Mishnah. The Shev Shmaitza, and you also have 7 statements, which the Gemara is going to quote soon. The Gemara is going to quote at the bottom of the next Amud, 7 statements that the Amoraim said of other cases where an animal is chafing. So you have, just from there alone, You have another 11 that are not mentioned. So how can Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel say that there are 11, that there are 18 Shreifers, Halacha Moshe Nisinai, when we see that there are 11 more? So, Bishlem of the Tana Didan. Now, it wouldn't be a problem for the Tana of On Mishnah that he didn't, because he didn't give a number afterward. You could say Tana Vashayer, the Tana. You could say whatever he taught, or Vashayer, ask you the Zachbal. You left out other ones. Fine. He, at the end of the Mishnah, it says Zachbal. So Zachbal will include all these other kinds of things. So for the Tana of On Mishnah, it's not a problem. He listed a bunch of them, and then he says Zachbal, here's a general rule, and you should know in that general rule or another 11. El of the Tonad Veda Bishmal, but the question is on Tonad Veda Bishmal, Dama Yudchas Shafis, the true Lekka, he says exactly 18, implying that there are no more than that. So now let's start going through the list. And we'll see that there are many more. So Bahoyika, so you have as follows. Number one, the Bay stands for Behema Shenechta Fulaglam, and Akubo Labaila Treif. That if an animal's legs were chopped off higher than the Akuba, it's Treif. Now the Akuba means the joint. Now, an animal's leg, unlike a human being's leg, has three joints. Kosher animals that have split hooves, they basically walk on their tiptoes. Their hooves correspond more or less to our fingernails, and when they walk on their hooves, they're basically walking on their tiptoes. So we have in our leg and in our arm, for that matter, we have two long bones that make up the length of the leg or the arm, and then we have the palm of the hand or the sole of the foot, which has a bunch of bones in it. In an animal, you have the upper two bones correspond to R2, and then you have the third one below that, which the Gemara later calls Akuba and Imcheres Imarosh, the joint that's sold together with the head, because people would commonly do that. The head has very little meat on it. This last joint also doesn't, so they would combine them together and sell them as a group. So that part corresponds more or less to our palm and our soul, and then below that you have the toes, and below that you have the toes and the hooves. So now, which Akuba are we talking about over here? We're going to talk about later on. Which one? We're going to talk about in the next parak. Actually, we're going to talk about which Akuba, which joint are we talking about? But in any case, you have a case where an animal's leg is chopped off above that joint, and the animal is treif as a result of that. So again, it didn't say that in the Mishnah. Tonad Veda Bishmal doesn't seem to have him in his list of 18 Shreifas, because after all, our Mishnah listed 18, and at this point, the Gemara is assuming that Tonad Veda Bishmal's 18 exactly means exactly the 18 that are in our Mishnah. So here you have one. So again, here you have one where the animal is Shreifa that's not at all mentioned in our Mishnah. Tosfos points out that actually in that connection, we're also going to learn in the next parak about the whole matter of Tsumas HaGidim, by the lower one of those joints, the one between the second and the third bone, what corresponds to our wrist or our heel, you have a bunch of tendons over there that are called Tsumas HaGidim, the meeting place of the tendons, and we're going to talk about in the next parak. Now, if a certain number of them are cut or damaged or whatever, then the animal will be treif. Tosfos says, fine, that's included in Nechtefu Raglel, that's included in the animal's leg being chopped off. But fine, but again, Tonad Veda Bishmal doesn't seem to have that in his list. So the Gemara answer, Sovla Kedav Shemin Allah Zedam Yechayla Hili Kovis for Lichis. Because Tonad Veda Bishmal doesn't have to hold that that's a treif. He holds like Rav Shimon Elazar, which we're going to learn. We're going to learn in that sugya later. He says that you could cauterize it, and the animal would continue to live. So therefore, that's not considered a treifa. So he doesn't have it in his list because he disagrees and holds that's not a treifa. Fine. But the Gemara says, why? So what? But after all, fine. Even if Rav Shimon Elazar was saying you could cauterize it and the animal could still live, but fine. Laman Palma, but who are we talking about? Whose opinion are we trying to reconcile over here? The Tonad Veda Bishmal. We're talking according to Tonad Veda Bishmal. And after all, Tonad Veda Bishmal, Treif Chayas Virle. We just said before at the bottom of the previous Amud that Tonad Veda Bishmal is one of the opinions that says that a Treif could live anyway. Doesn't matter, treated or not. It can still live. The fact that it can live still doesn't prevent it from being defined as treifa. So what if the Shimon Elazar says you have a way of making the animal live? The Tonad Veda Bishmal's definition of treifa is not if it's going to die. It's if one of the treifas that was said, halachal emotion yisinai. Well then, if we have later on in the next paragraph, we're going to learn about an animal whose legs were chopped off, and we're going to say that it's treifa. then it shouldn't matter whether Reb Shimon Elazar says that it can live or not. According to Tanad Veda Bishmal, that wouldn't, according to the Chachamim, against Tanad Veda Bishmal, that would make a difference. But according to Tanad Veda Bishmal themselves, that sort of thing should not be, sort of thing should not be allowed. So the Gemara says, Ella Shavala Kid Reb Shimon Elazar. No, rather we're going to say that's the reason why Tanad Veda Bishmal does not list that one, because he holds that's Reb Shimon Elazar, Dama Kshedi. He says flat out that the animal is actually kosher. So in other words, Rashi explains that Rashi says that in the Tesefta, it says, Reb Shimon Elazar says the animal is kosher because you could cauterize it, you could live. So here, first the Gemara had brought just the second part of what he said, because you could cauterize it. Now we're bringing the fact as he says, it is kosher. So what we're going to say is Tanan Veda Bishmal agrees with him that it's kosher, but holds for a different reason. The Reb Shimon Elazar would say the reason is, yes, he would hold Tshefa and Hekaya. The definition of a Tshefa is it's not going to live. However, he would live if you cauterize it. Meanwhile, Tanan Reb Shimon would say, no, never mind that. Doesn't matter whether you can cauterize it or not. The fact is that we only have the list of Tshefas that were set halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. He holds this is not one of them. Well, therefore the animal is kosher, and therefore we're not going to list it under the Tshefas. So he holds a kosher, but for a different reason. Okay, now how about another one? What about there's another tshefa where the animal is missing a certain number of vertebrae in its spine? Now, we talked about in the Mishnah where the spinal cord is cut. That's something else. But here we talked about there, Rashi had said that the spine itself is not really, that is not a separate tshefa of its own. But here we're saying there is. If you just have a vertebrae damaged or something, no big deal. But you actually have, if you have a certain number of vertebrae are missing, as we're going to discuss now in the Gemara, then an animal is in fact trefa. So the term we learn in a Mishnah as far as the dinim of tumas oyel. We know that we know that a mess, a human mess, is metame the oyel. If a person is under the same roof as it, or he overshadows it, or it overshadows him, whatever. You have like this. An individual bone is not going to be metamin ba'oil. Only when you have enough bones together, that makes up a certain amount. You have there has to be a certain volume of them, and you have various other possibilities. One of them is that if you have a complete skull and a complete spine, then already it's metamin ba'oil, even though there's no flesh on them, because that already makes up most of the frame of the body. So the Mishnah says, "Kama chisored b'shedra." How much of the skull has to be missing so that this din of tumas oil will not apply to it? How much of the spine has to be missing in order for it to not count together with the skull to be metamed b'oil? The Shammai says only if two vertebrae or more are missing. Or Basil and Choyachas, Basil says even if only one vertebrae is missing. But Reb Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the same Tzreifa, Reb Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, the same machlokas would be as far as Tzreifa. Meaning the same way, the Shammai is saying that only if you have two vertebrae missing, is the spine considered incomplete? Well, by the same token, the Shammai would hold with an animal, only if two or more vertebrae are missing, is the animal Tzreifa. Whereas the Sibyl, who says that one vertebrae is enough to make that the spine is not going to be contaminated by oil anymore together with the skull, they would also say that if one vertebrae is missing, then the animal is tshefa already. So this is another tshefa. Both the Shammai and the Sibyl agree to that. It's not in our Mishnah, and Tanna Rebbe Shmuel doesn't seem to have it on his list. Thomas just points out that the reason why, now what makes us say that should have anything to do with tshefa, is because the Mishnah goes on with that Mishnah, she goes on to talk about how much of the skull would have to be missing for it not to be metamin b'oil, and there you have the Sibyl says, and then Shammai and the Sibyl talk about, the Sibyl in particular, enough that if an equivalent amount was missing from a living person's skull, then he would die. So we see that these amounts that we're talking about, how much is missing, has to do with whether it's going to live or die. Still, Tosfos says that on the face of it, it's only we're deriving it from that Mishnah, but that's Tosfos' question. And how is the Gemara asking on it? And the answer is because it's a good derivation from the Mishnah. We see that it has to do with how much it's going to live. In this connection, by the way, Tosfos brings in an interesting point about all these tshefas that we're talking about apply to animals. To what extent do they also apply to human beings? To what extent do their analog apply to human beings? So, for example, Josephus points out that the one example we're going to have in the Gemara tomorrow, for example, is we had in the Mishnah that if the gallbladder has a hole in it, then the animal is safe. And we're going to see in the Gemara tomorrow that the Chaim and the Chachamim are pointing out that for example, Eov's gallbladder was damaged during all the suffering that he went through, and still he survived. So it would seem to imply that there is a certain similarity between Trafus, people and animals, and Trafus gives other examples from the para. On the other hand, Trafus says maybe not. For example, Trafus says that you're talking about, for example, if a certain amount of the skull is missing, and we'll talk about later in the parax, as far as the skull of an animal that's damaged, with a human being, they can be missing quite a significant part of their skull and still survive. So Trafus says fine, but we're talking about also if the membrane, if the outer membrane around the brain is damaged as well, then that would kill them. Anyway, Trafus then says that maybe not. Actually, there might be differences in that regard between people and animals. In particular, Tosfos says that the chromatactin, the membrane that directly surrounds the brain, the pia mater, is stronger in people than it is in animals, so therefore there might not necessarily be the same trefa, might not apply. So there is quite a bit of discussion among Tosfos themselves in various places and among various Rishonim and Achronim about this whole question of to what extent do the trefas of animals and people, to what extent do they coincide, or to what extent do we say that something can be trefa by an animal, but a person would still be able to survive it, or vice versa. One story they tell in that regard is there was a chosid in Simon Tzedek, a chosid Rav named Yosef Eliyahu Rivlin. He was a rov in Russia, and at one point he developed a lung disease, where the equivalent of it by animals would make him trach. There was a type of silva, a type of adhesion from the lung, which we're going to talk about in more detail. We're going to talk about those later on in the paper. So the doctors told him there's no cure for him, he's going to die from it. Now this particular case of these silvas happens to be a machlokas of the Beis Yosef and the Rama. The Beis Yosef holds that an animal would be kosher with that condition, the Rama holds it trach. So Rav Yosef Eliyahu says to himself, in that case, if I stay here in Futsal, in general, in Europe, we pass him like the Ramah. But in Eretz Yisrael, where it's more in those days, it was mostly Saudim, they pass him like the Beis Yosef. So he says, if I go to Eretz Yisrael, the Mora de Asra, the local halakhic authority there is the Beis Yosef, and then Min HaShemayim, it'll come about that the halacha will be passed from like him, and even though I have this condition, even though I have these silvas on my lungs, nevertheless I will live, because the Beis Yosef says that an animal with that condition would be kosher. Sure enough, he moved to Eretz Yisrael and lived there over 20 years longer. So this is an example, first of all, of how the trefas of animals and people have a certain coincidence between them, but it's also, we also see it's an example of how Hashem makes things happen in the world according to halacha. And therefore, in fact, depending on who the Mora Da'asra is, the halacha and therefore the results in real life are going to be different between one and the other. Anyway, so getting back to the Gemara again. So the question is that if this Chama and this Silva are arguing how many vertebrae is enough to that a human spine won't be metame ba'oihel, together with a skull, and Rabbi Yehuda is telling us the same machlokas applies to Trefus, then that ought to be on the list, and it's not. So the answer is fine. Fine, well, we calculate in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we have the case of the hemsis and the Beis HaKosis, third in the second stomach to the animal, where they have a hole in them, where it's punctured towards the outside, meaning into the body cavity. You counted them as two. Well, Sashvin and Bechada. So instead, turn in Vedavish Mok, and count them as one. So therefore, you can subtract one because you're combining two together, and then you have room to add one, namely where a certain number of vertebrae are missing. So now we're saying, in other words, Tana Devedev Shmuel says 18, and our Mishnah says 18, but they don't have to be the exact same list. They can both agree that there are 18 basic trefas, but they can enumerate them differently. Tosfos brings up a point, by the way, which is going to come up a number of times in our parak, about chisorin mebifnim. If something is missing on the inside of an organ, is that considered that it's chaser only where it's visible on the outside of the organ? Tosfos mentioned it on Aleph in connection with the organs that have holes in them. So here, if you say Now again, when we talk about chisoron, we said that if the lung is missing something, and we're talking about is that considered a separate trefa of their own? So Tosfos points out, if we don't consider that a separate trefa, then you'd be back down to 17. So evidently we have to be talking according to Reb Shimon, who says that that is called a chisoron, and therefore it's actually counted as a separate trefa. The chum would just consider it part of nikav, part of that it has a hole. Fine. So that takes care of the second. Next, the Gemara says, well, Ikad Gluda. What about the third case? Again, we have the Simon on Amon Alabaster, Beis Samach Gimel Reish, which stands for four trefers that are explained in Brises, in Mishnayos or Brises. And the Gimel stands for Gluda, where the animal is inflayed. That's an example of the animal being trefer. That's not listed in our Mishnah. He says, Kabbalah Kira Meir, Demachshir. Fine, turn to Meir Ishmael, hold up the Meir, Demachshir, who says that it's Kotler. Okay, the Gemara says, Va'ika Charusa. What about the fourth one where the lung dried up and shrank? So you have now why would that happen? The Gemara is going to explain later on that what happens is the animal gets frightened by something. It might get frightened by something of natural causes, for example by lightning, for example by thunder and lightning, or for example by a predator killing one of its food or something, or it might be bidei adam that for example a person shechted another animal in front of it. So either of those would cause the lungs shrink up and become hard. We'll talk about it in the Gemara later on in our prayer. So now, that's another example where the animal is trefa. And the answer is, fine. Mora manfatonimo, which Tana is it that said in our Mishnah, that says that in our Mishnah we have the list if the gallbladder has a hole, which Tana is it that says that that's trefa? Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. That would be Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, and as we're going to learn Gemara tomorrow, the other Chachamim disagree with him. Well then, after Gemara, Ba'al Chalusa. Well then, very well, the Tana of Rabbi Shmuel can hold like the Chachamim, so he would subtract Mora from the list, and therefore instead he could put Chagrusa. So you still have 18. Okay. So far, so good. But now the Gemara says, well, it's a Shev Shmaitza. Fine. What about, though, we also have seven statements of Amidorian, also about conditions that make an animal trefa, and those are not in the Mishnah, and you don't seem to have room for them in the Mishnah. So again, the question is, how the Mishnah is saying, oh, list, and fine, the Mishnah's list is not meant to be exhausted, but Tonet Veda Bishmal, who says that you have to have 18 and no more, so what is he doing with these seven? And we're not going to say that the Amidorian invented them, of course, Chas v'Shalom. These all have to be halachas that are originally part of the original definition of trefa, just they weren't stated explicitly until the Amidorian came in second. Number one, the Amar of Masna, Hai Dukta de Achma, the Shof Neduchte, if the hip bone gets dislocated from its place, from its socket, trefa, then the animal is trefa. So now what you have is that you have again the animal's leg has three bones in it. The top bone corresponds to our thigh bones. So that one is inserted into a socket in the hip bone, and that's how it's able to rotate. That's how you're able to rotate your leg freely. So now Rav Masna is telling us that if the thigh bone got dislocated from its socket in the hip bone, then the animal is going to be trefa. Now we actually do have later on in the parah, where the Gemara is going to clarify, it's not just that it got dislocated, it's also if the tendons over there are rotted away or whatever. We'll talk about that over there. So Rashi in fact says that here, fine, we were talking about that it wasn't just that it dislocated, it's also that those tendons are damaged. We'll talk about that in more detail later in the parent. Anyway, so yeah, that's the first one. So, and that's not anywhere in our Mishnah. Second of all, the Omer Rochish Bakapa, Mishmei de Rav, Rochish Bakapa says in the name of Rav, Loksa Bakuya Achas Trefa. If an animal was damaged in even one kidney, then it's Trefa. Obviously, if it's both of them, but in other words, the point is, later in the parable, we're going to talk about, and we talked about this the other day, that if both kidneys are actually missing, then the animal is kosher, but if a kidney was injured or damaged or whatever, then the animal is Trefa. And Utnan, another one is later in the Mishnah, later in our paddock, we learn a Mishnah, Nitalak Tefer Ksheira, that if the spleen of the animal was removed, then it's still kosher. But Rabbi Avira tells us in the name of Rava, Loishanu Ela Nital, that would only be if the spleen was removed. Avon Nikav Trefa, but if it has a hole, then it would be Trefa. to be exact, we're going to learn in the Gemara later on that the spleen has different ends of it, a thin end and a thick end, and the problem is only if there's a hole in the thick end. We'll talk about that there. But in any case, that's another tefra that's not listed in the Mishnah. So now, even though it's mentioned in the Mishnah, it's listed among the statements of the Amiroyim, because that would be the chiddush that we have over here. There's a difference between whether it was removed or whether it has a hole. That's a big chiddush that we wouldn't know from the Mishnah. The simonim of the shchita itself, the windpipe and the esophagus, if they were torn away in most places from where they're supposed to be attached, they're supposed to be attached to the body by various ligaments, and now if they're torn out of place, then also trefer, then the animal is a trefer. We're going to talk about later on in the pattern that if they are, then how would you be able to check the animal anyway? You could hold them, but whatever. The point is that if they're mostly torn from their moorings, then they're trefer. Tosfos brings from a different explanation from Rabbeinu Chananel that it means also the windpipe and the esophagus are usually attached to one another along their length. Along most of their length, and here what it means is that they're separated from one another. Anyway, so then the animal is also tefra. And here's another one: neck with selama ipra. If a rib of the animal was dislocated from its place of attachment, meaning that the actual half vertebra that his rib was attached to is dislocated together with the rib that's attached there. So then also tefra. Again, later on, we're going to talk about in more detail about that later in our perek, and does that actually have to be that the vertebra was dislocated as well, or is it enough that just the rib itself was dislocated? We'll talk about it later in the perek. In any case, that's another tereka. And then another one, regardless of nech b'sabaruba. Another one is that if the skull of the animal was mostly crushed. So we're not even talking about that there's a hole in it per se, but you just have that it's been broken. It's been broken and in many different places. So then also the animal's trade. And the flesh, the muscles that cover most of the keres, the rubber, if most of it was cut. So now we did learn in the Mishnah about Nikra Roiva Keres, but Rashi explains that this is actually a membrane that covers the keres. When you Rashi described, when you open up, when you check the animal, when you open it up, then you'll see that membrane. It's called Choifes Roiva Keres because Rashi points out some of the keres is behind the ribs. Most of it is covered with muscles, and then behind the muscles you have this membrane. And if most of that membrane was ripped, then also the animal is trafer. So you have seven trafers over here that are listed by Amoroyim. Tonid Reda Bishmal agrees to them, we would assume. And the fact is they're not an arm mitzvah, so then in that case there's many more than the 18 that Tonid Reda Bishmal is saying. So the Gemara answers in the Kuvik Tman Yahavu. If you look in our Mishnah, you had 8 cases of organs that had holes in them. Well, Chashvin and Bachad, Tanad Reda Bishmal, we'll count them all as one general trefer called where a vital organ has a hole in it. So therefore, Afik Shev, Ba'al Shev, well, very well then. We can subtract 7, and we can add 7, and then we still have our list of 18. Well, the Gemara asks, you're talking, but if Tanad Reda Bishmal counts it like that, then we should say the same thing. We had 2 cases in the Mishnah where something was severed, where something was cut, and they're counted as one, namely the windpipe and the spinal cord. So in that case, if Tonid Reda Bishmal is going to say that any time we have things that are in the same general category, we count them all as one, then you should have to count both psukis as one, so you're lacking one. And furthermore, the oid, and here's another question. This that Rabbi Avira had said in the name of Rava about if the spleen has a hole in it, Nami Nikubayi. Well, after all, that's also where it has a hole. If he's going to say any time it has a hole, it all counts as the same thing, then you're down to 16. One answer is Ella. Hanukkah Tarchi to after Loitara. The answer is, we're going to say, before we subtracted two, when we were going through the list of Vaskir, we had two, where the animal's leg was chopped off, or where it was flayed, and he said we should take them out, because according to Tana Dvei B'Shmuel, they're not Tzreifa. We said, as far as the animal whose legs were chopped off, they would hold like a criminal Ozer, but for a different reason than him, and he said as far as flayed, they would hold like a mayor. No, don't say that after all. Say that they do consider them Tzreifa. So therefore, we add those back in. Therefore, in the end, we end up with 18 Tzreifas. Therefore, we end up with 18 Tzreifas after all. So this goes into some of the other ones over here, some of the other that we mentioned over here in this list, and how exactly we still consider them, and how exactly we still count them. And it comes out, according to the Tana Mishnah, we do in fact have 18. Some of them are the same as in our Mishnah, but some of them are not. Some of them are the Shev Shmaitzer, the seven statements of the Chacham, of the Amoraim that we just said, plus we also combine together some of the ones in the Mishnah, and therefore we wind up with a total of 18, as Tana Mishnah says. So we'll continue tomorrow, but as the Shem will go, continue getting into these details of what is and isn't Tzreifa, and the general definition of what Tzreifa is.